These words from 2 Corinthians. But we have this treasure in earthen vessels to show that the transcendent power belongs to God and not to us. We're afflicted in every way, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Always carrying in the body of the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may be manifested in our bodies. Therefore, having this ministry by the mercy of God, we do not lose heart. We do not lose heart. I tried again this week to do the impossible. Not the first time, not the last time. You know, in some ways, all of us keep doing what we know doesn't work and hope that someday it might. But this was even more profound than that. I tried, and I'm not kidding, I tried literally to turn back time. I ran across something on my desk that reminded me that I had a wedding coming up. I have a wedding coming up in June. We were making some vague long-distance plans for the summer and getting things together. I thought, oh, I got that wedding. When is that? Wilson Cash is marrying Michelle, and that's going to be a lot of fun. And I thought, wow, let's look at my calendar. I look at my calendar, and of course, it's on the iPhone. We don't write anything down anymore. And June was blank. Going, oh, what day was that? So I sent Rex a text message, and he sent me back the day. And I thought, okay, I'm putting that on the calendar now. I'm not going to forget. I put the thing in. You know, you type it in, and it hit the done button, and it popped in for a second and then disappeared. Cash wedding. Pop, disappear. Like a fraction of a second. I could see it, and it was gone. And I was puzzled. And then I noticed that I was trying to schedule an event for June 2014. Scroll forward, June 2015, it's already there, I had it covered. But isn't it true that it wouldn't be hard to think of at all a moment where you would say, gosh, if I had even that fraction of a second back again, I would turn left instead of right. I'd take a breath before I said that. There will be somebody that will say, in some way, misguided, to be sure, I wish I'd checked that fuse box at the school one more time, or something to that effect. We can't. And things keep happening. And they will continue to keep happening by our own hand and by fate and circumstance. Because Paul is absolutely right. This ministry we have, this community we have, the way we share life and love, it's a treasure, but it is in some seriously cracked up earthen vessels, which is a metaphor for us. You know, we've even put the idea into our popular culture and our way of thinking. We have feet of clay. That's another way of saying we have the treasure in earthen vessels. And don't we know it? You know, kind of look down at those, well, they've been carrying us around for, you know, most of us into the fourth quarter of our lives or close to that. They got some chips in those things, don't they? There's a crack around the back, and that one there's got a big hole in it. And yet we move forward. The question that informs our lives and our ministry, I think, is how do we care for clay feet? Because they are what they are, and they're going to keep being what they are. We're going to keep knocking chips out of them and punching holes in them and cracking them and trying to rearrange the dust on them. How do we care for clay feet? We know that we have done unto ourselves, we have self-inflicted wounds in our lives, and we have done unto others, and part of what chips up our clay feet is the recoil from our knowledge that others have been wounded by us. How do we do that? How do we care for clay feet? Well, I think first of all, even though we can't ultimately and profoundly change who we are, nor should we ultimately and profoundly change who we are, we can rearrange some of the details of our act. We can work toward little ways of self-improvement. Well, what could that be? We were talking this week in my substance use and abuse class how we are increasingly in our world using technology and even medicine to change our personalities, to change the way we look at things. And there are a lot of ever-increasingly powerful psychotropic medicines that seek to alter our moods and change our outlook, many of which have saved people's lives. But the process also raises a more intriguing question: how far are we going to go with this? And the question I pose to my students is this: imagine somebody who loves you very much, for better or worse, but there's something about you that if somebody told them secretly, they would give you this pill that you could sneak in their coffee to get them to quit doing that, or being that way, or having that approach, you do it. Every hand goes up. You know, and of course, we all have weird quirks that are just part of who we are, and, you know, on a good day we sort of keep them at bay, and on a bad day we have to redress some things, right? But we can, I think, take a breath and be aware that there might be a way to make the impact of that piece of us less edgy. 7 or 8 years ago, it occurred to me that I am very good at pointing out to folks, pointing out to others, that there's a big difference between listening and waiting for your turn to talk. It's one of my favorite little pet pieces of advice. And then it occurred to me that when I try to turn that advice inward, not only is it hard for me to listen while I'm waiting for my turn to talk, I will sometimes just start talking anyway, even if it's not my turn. I still do that. I try not to do it as much. It's just an example of a tiny little way we can both recognize and in some way embrace the reality of our clay feet and maybe work toward moving that part of our foot in a place where it's not what we kick first. Get the idea? Dial it back. Take a breath. Self-improvement. Because these are self-inflicted wounds. So also, we all have a story, and I imagine we could recall one in a heartbeat, where even a half a second would have prevented the inflicting of great pain on somebody else, somebody we love, somebody we've never met, it doesn't matter. And sometimes we can make that right, and sometimes we can't. One of the great pieces of wisdom that came out of the 20th century was the 12-step model of recovery. And it was designed initially for excessive alcohol use, and it's been applied to many other things. But in a more transcendent way, the process of 12-step living has within it some useful bits of insight and nuggets of helpful way of being. One of which is the step that says, acknowledged our mistakes and have sought where possible, such that it wouldn't hurt them to do it, make amends with others. And there are ways we can specifically try to make amends. There are also probably people that we've had in our lives that if we tried to go make amends to them, they would shut the door and say, I don't even want to see you. And that's understandable. But there's a way to sort of collectively make amends, even if not directly. We can, in some sense, through charity and generosity, move something forward positively, maybe in the name of someone we've wounded, you know, or at least in our own mind say, this is in part an effort to make this better because I made that worse. One of my favorite little examples of this is something that's called a mitzvah, comes out of Jewish tradition, and it is simply an act of goodwill or a random act of kindness for which there's no possible way to get a reward. This is not an effort to get something better. It's an effort to make something better without even knowing it. And, you know, we don't even have these anymore, but this is an example of what I mean. If you were in a big city and you had a whole pocket full of quarters and you just went up and down the street plugging expired parking meters, it's the sort of idea that you did something that benefited somebody else that they can't possibly know or possibly pay back. That's a mitzvah. So another way to tend to clay feet, to care for clay feet, is to, I don't know, through some level of generosity or charity, try a mitzvah. Self-improvement, what some might even call mitzvah therapy. But it leads to the more broad insight that we aren't the only ones with clay feet, that this is fundamental to the human condition. And Paul speaks of it in the New Testament. There are hundreds of different ways it's pointed out to us. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. We're all in this together. We're all in this together. And it would seem to me that when we at least acknowledge and maybe even put our hands in the dents in our own feet, it might draw us closer together, give us a greater sense of kinship, or put another way, make us a little more empathetic when there's a twitch to judge the foibles of others. That's the point. You know, we truly are all in this together, and among the many things we're together in is that we aren't everything we need to be all the time. It's one of the most powerful moments in the New Testament. It happens, oddly enough, after Jesus has died and been raised and appears to the disciples. The second time, he has this conversation with Thomas. And he says to Thomas, literally, put your hand where my hand was wounded. Put your hand in the wound. And now I'm speculating as to all of the meaning of this, but in one sense, it's an acknowledgement that Jesus has a self-inflicted wound. He allowed this to happen. And when Thomas holds him in his hand, Jesus is saying, I know you have inflicted wounds on your own hand too, and we're in this together. And for as different as we are, me being the son of the Lord High God, and you being Thomas the son of, well, whoever we're your parents, and so on, there's this moment of kinship in self-inflicted wounds that Jesus seeks to both tell us about and to try to bring about healing. Okay, dial that back. I don't get along with everybody in my life. I certainly don't agree with the social and political and ideological positions of many people in my life. And yet, I think about, and this is really quite personal, and it involves someone we've all known and loved, Giles Dalby and I would like to consider that he thought of me as a good friend, and I certainly did he. 100 issues in life, politically and socially, we would agree on like 5 of them. And yet, out of both my respect for his leadership and at least what I believe was his acknowledgement of my place here in leadership, I learned a lot from him about what leadership is about. I also learned that he and I shared exactly the same level of devotion to family and a sense of responsibility to community. And overarching all of that, a sense of being deeply blessed with both the opportunity to serve and the gifts to make that happen. And that's true for everybody. All of us have an opportunity to serve and special gifts to make that work. So when it's important, we were very much alike. And where we weren't was never really all that important. He also was a Green Bay Packer fan. That helped a lot. But the point is, tending to clay feet involves, you know, trying to make it a little better for ourselves, self-improvement, you know, generosity to others, but also the fundamental understanding that we're way more alike than different, and that those levels of alikeness and commonality become community. And when we most need it, that's the thing that we most profoundly have as a blessing from God. A sense of kinship, a sense of commonality, even a sense of commonality that all of us have dinged up, cracked clay feet. And the overarching objective of Jesus making that clear with Thomas and all of us is we have this ministry together and we all have our part in it so that the community is better, but even more profoundly than that, so that we do not lose heart. We do not lose heart now. We do not lose heart tomorrow when we see the aftermath and the smoke and the ruins. We do not lose heart and move forward. Amen.